Welcome to 2% with Michael Easter. Today is April 29th, a Monday, another good day to be alive. And our episode today is, are you overdosing on caffeine? So we're going to talk about some of the upsides and potential downsides of caffeine, mainly focusing on the downsides of what can happen if you are taking in too much caffeine, how to tell if you're taking in too much caffeine, and what to do if you find that you might be on the high side and could maybe see some benefits from lowering that. So I'm going to talk about kind of my own experience going off of caffeine and what I learned from that. And then we'll dive into a bunch of the research. So it should be a good one. Okay. But before we dive in, some quick housekeeping. This episode is totally free to everyone. Meanwhile, our Wednesday and Friday episodes, those are fully accessible only to members. So if you want to get all that awesome content, as well as everything we have on TWOPCT.com, which is just a crazy backlog of great health, performance, and mindset stories, just become a member. It's about $6 a month. Pretty cheap. We save you way more time and money than the monthly cost. You can become a member in the post. All right, let's get on with it. Okay, a handful of years ago, I quit caffeine cold turkey. So I go from drinking a lot of it to none immediately. And the results, they were like most things that improve our lives. They were totally uncomfortable in the short term, but super beneficial in the long run. So now I nix caffeine for a couple of weeks, at least once a year. I'll just once a year go off the stuff for 2 weeks. And then afterwards, what tends to happen is that I will kind of slowly reintroduce caffeine. And as I drink more and more, my caffeine drinking eventually creeps back up to high levels. And then I reset the process, go back to zero and start again. Now, let me tell you about the first time I ever did this though. The first time I gave up caffeine, the first 24 hours of that experience were like a scene out of the movie Trainspotting. And if you haven't seen Trainspotting, I don't know whether to tell you if you should, to be quite honest. It's a great movie that has some terrible scenes. But I want you to picture a grown man balled up on the couch, sweating in the winter, on the cusp of vomiting, head split right in two. That was me. I then slept for 18 hours the first night off of caffeine. 18 hours. And then the rest of my nights after that, I was like 10, 10, 8, 8. It was wild. I also had a low-grade headache that lasted for a few days, maybe 3 to 5 days. But here's the thing. I was sleeping a lot sounder, a lot longer, and despite a few mornings with a serious coffee craving, I did feel better. I felt much better. I didn't really have an afternoon slump, meaning I had more energy. I was also less irritable. I was less stressed. Within a few weeks off of caffeine, I had lost 4 pounds. So caffeine can obviously be a good thing. It improves focus, it improves alertness, etc. And there is a good reason why tea and coffee are two of the most popular drinks on planet Earth. And the energy drink market is worth more than $100 billion. It's all thanks to caffeine. So obviously there's some good thing happening there. But you can't have too much of a good thing. Your experience with caffeine, it really depends on your biology and how much of it you take in. Before I decided to give up caffeine, I was drinking upwards of maybe 3 cups of coffee a day, plus a few other caffeinated drinks like tea and diet soda. But conversations that I had with people who are much smarter than myself, that is to say, PhD, biochemists, nutritionists, sleep experts, neurologists, they all led me to believe that I was overdoing caffeine at a rate that was bad for my health, my sleep, my disposition, and my performance. So how did I even stumble onto this idea? I thought I might be overdoing caffeine after speaking with Dr. Trevor Cashy, and you probably know his name if you've been around on 2% for a while or read The Comfort Crisis. He's a friend of 2%. He is a biochemistry super genius, and yes, he was in The Comfort Crisis. So Trevor runs this big, amazing, incredible, life-changing nutrition coaching service that really is, they start with nutrition as the entry point and just end up kind of overhauling people's lives in general. It's really amazing. But he often has new clients, and these are people who range from average Janes to Olympians or all over the place. He has them go caffeine-free for 2 weeks as part of a larger approach to suss out foods that might be causing indigestion, sleep issues, bloating, or sluggishness. So coffee is a well-known gastrointestinal irritant. And then obviously it's designed to keep us alert. So here's how it works that way. It blocks the action of adenosine, which is a chemical that occurs naturally in the brain and cues the body into fatigue. Meanwhile, it increases the release of cortisol, which is a hormone that exacerbates the stress response and can interrupt normal patterns of wakefulness and sleep. So removing caffeine, it usually means that sleep will naturally improve. Cortisol levels will also drop. So that means probably going to be a little less stressed. So on the sleep front, plenty of research has shown that ample sleep, it makes for a happier, healthier mind and body. According to Dr. Kashi, those sleep advantages could outweigh any chemical benefits you'd see from caffeine. So no, you don't have this stimulus that gets you ramped up, but you may have slept a lot better, which is just going to mean you don't even need that in the first place. I talked to a guy whose name is Chris Winter. He's a neurologist and the author of The Sleep Solution. And he told me that better sleep often leads to better eating habits. So this is likely why I dropped a few pounds in those early first weeks. So for example, one study found that sleep-deprived people ate nearly 600 more calories a day than people who got in a full night's worth of sleep. So when you're tired, the hunger-inducing hormone ghrelin goes up, while the fullness-signaling hormone leptin goes down. So you have an imbalance there. Plus, you have more time to eat, right? There's more time on the clock. You're going to fill it with eating. And if you're eliminating caffeine from sweet coffee drinks or energy drinks, the benefits there can be twofold because you're cutting out a lot of calories. People also often report feeling less anxious after removing caffeine. Caffeine has been implicated in anxiety in various strong studies that date back to the late 80s. And the DSM-5, which is basically the Bible for mental health professionals, it officially recognizes caffeine-induced anxiety disorder. It's like, yeah, caffeine can create anxiety. In very rare cases too, and this is rare, but it's interesting, large amounts of caffeine can even increase the likelihood of having mini strokes, which are called transient ischemic attacks, during which blood flow to your brain is briefly cut off just for a very short amount of time. So Winter, who is the neurologist, he told me, it's really weird to see a 21-year-old who's had lots of subtle vascular strokes over the years. And these tend to be people who are really pounding energy drinks. There is certainly such a thing as too much caffeine. Okay, so that's what caffeine can do. Now the question is, how much caffeine are we actually consuming? So 90% of American adults ingest caffeine every day. So 9 out of 10 Americans are taking in some amount of caffeine. Now the average intake is about 300 milligrams, meaning 50% of people will be below that, 50% of people will be above that. And that, so you're like, okay, what is 300 milligrams? What does that even mean? 300 milligrams is about a 16-ounce or medium Starbucks drip coffee that contains 310 milligrams. But meanwhile, a 20-ounce light roast has 475 milligrams. So you can see that's quite a bit. And then you have energy drinks, of course. A standard 8-ounce can of Red Bull has about 77 milligrams. But here's the thing. There's an entirely new breed of energy drinks that are pushing the boundaries of caffeination. So for example, Bang Energy Drinks, B-A-N-G, they have about 300 milligrams, not to mention all sorts of other, I don't know, energy-inducing chemicals. Now, I once had a long drive from Montana to Nevada, and it ran late into the night. So I stop at this truck stop, and this is somewhere around Blackfoot, Idaho, and I purchase a can of Bang. Don't ask me why I did this. It was late. I wasn't thinking correctly. This particular can, its flavor was, quote, rainbow unicorn, unquote. And what that tastes like is it really tastes like bubblegum mixed with marketing dollars. But I drink this thing anyways. Now, afterwards, I couldn't feel my face for an hour. I became super paranoid that a deer was going to run out into the road and lead me to crash into a ditch at 80 miles an hour and just burn up in this giant fireball of vehicle and gasoline. But, you know, on the upside, I did make it to Nevada faster than ever. So there's that. What I'm trying to communicate here is that all in all, this means that if you are downing multiple cups of coffee a day, or just one really big coffee, and tossing in some tea, diet soda, etc., you're definitely drinking more than 400 milligrams a day, maybe even north of 1,000. So which raises an important question. What dose of caffeine can lead to problems? Here's the answer. Anything over 400 milligrams a day can bring about side effects like headaches, insomnia, an upset stomach, and anxiety. And that is according to the Mayo Clinic. 14% of Americans drink that or more regularly. Now, I think the number is actually probably higher when you consider that the sort of average is 300. I think that it makes logical sense that you'd have a higher number than 14% who are drinking more than 400. But here's the thing too, is that sensitivity to caffeine, it differs. So some people will experience negative effects at just 100 milligrams. So they can just have 100 milligrams and they're in the red zone. They're in the bad zone. But on the other hand, other people can drink 800 or more a day and they can be totally fine. So it's really hard to say. That difference, that data on the difference is according to Maggie Sweeney. And she's a researcher at Johns Hopkins Medical Institute. I talked with her a little bit. And she basically told me that your response is likely influenced by your lifestyle and your genes. So when I did the math on what I had been drinking, I'd been consuming roughly 1200 milligrams throughout the day and had been for nearly 2 decades. And here's an important thing, is that caffeine has a half-life of about 6 hours, meaning that if you drink 300 milligrams at noon, you will have about 150 milligrams in your system at 6 p.m., about 75 milligrams in your body at midnight, and so on. So this means that my body had likely spent almost 2 decades jammed full of caffeine. So should you give it up? Here's the big question, right? Dr. Kashi, he has a pretty good test to determine if a client is due for a breakup with caffeine. And I'm going to quote him here. Ask someone to remove caffeine and watch the look on their face. That is what he said. Obviously, you're keeping an eye out for a flash of existential dread. If the idea of removing caffeine freaks you out, you probably should try removing caffeine for a little while to see what happens. Meanwhile, the researcher with Johns Hopkins, Maggie Sweeney, she told me to look for signs of withdrawal like headaches, fatigue, and irritability. And that's usually a good sign. If for whatever reason you know your coffee comes in super late one morning and you're kind of like irritable, maybe you start to get a headache, that's a pretty good sign you might be a little bit dependent. So what do we do? Okay, so you've learned that, 400 milligrams is kind of an average of where people start to have problems, but it could be lower, it could be higher, you don't know. You've kind of got a sense of maybe how much caffeine you take in every single day. You've learned that giving it up might be a good thing. So how do you actually give it up? I see that there's basically two methods here. So method one is the slow detox. Sweeney, who is the Hopkins researcher, she suggested gradually weaning yourself off of caffeine. So she suggested to just start mixing decaf into your caffeinated coffee. If you're a particularly heavy user, it may take several weeks to gradually reduce your caffeine consumption, she told me. Drinking plenty of water and herbal tea as you do that can help everything go well. Now, the upside of this method is that you won't go through the hell that I did. It's kind of this slow, gradual burn off where you don't really have as many of the negative effects. The downside is that it takes a long time and it requires complicated measuring and mixing of caffeinated and non-caffeinated coffee or tea. I think because you won't be seeing a ton of crazy things change over this 2 weeks or however long it takes you, I think that makes you a little less likely to actually stick with it. So method two, and this is the one that I did, is cold turkey. Now, Chris Winter, the sleep researcher and neurologist, he described my method, the cold turkey method, as unnecessary suffering. But here's the thing, it felt a lot more practical to me. And Kashi agreed with me. So he basically just said, dude, just take a shitty weekend with some herbal tea and some aspirin, get it over with, you'll be fine, then you don't have to think about it. So the upside of that method is that I think I am glad that I just ripped the Band-Aid off and I didn't have to do any crazy caffeine mixing math for 2 weeks. Plus, I got to see the results of a caffeine-free life a lot more quickly. It was like once that sort of 24 hours of just hell and sleep was done, yeah, I had a headache for a few days, but I was sleeping better. I mean, it was just this immediate transition where I could very quickly see some benefits. The downside of that method is that at its worst, that method will feel like you have the 24-hour flu, and then you'll probably have a little bit of a headache for a couple days after. So have fun, don't die. And if there's one thing you can take away from this piece, it is to please avoid unicorn-themed Bang energy drinks at all costs. At all costs. Michael. As a reminder, we are brought to you by Momentous Nutrition, the maker of supplements that you can actually trust. This is a company that made me feel good about supplements again. My two go-tos from them are their multivitamin, which is awesome, as well as their plant protein, also a really great product. Easter gets you 15% off. Next, we are brought to you by GoRuck, the maker of the world's finest rucksacks. My go-to setup is a Rucker 4.0 and a 30-pound plate. That's my daily driver. They make good stuff. If I'm traveling, I will take a GR1. Check them out. Easter gets you 10% off. And then finally, last but not least, Maui Nui Venison, harvester of the world's healthiest meat. I've been eating a lot of Maui Nui lately. Feeling great. Don't take my word for it that this stuff is healthy, though. Please check out the study that I have linked to down in the ad copy about how healthy Axisteer is. It's quite incredible. And if you type in Easter, you want to dabble in some of that, you will get 20% off. So check it out. Thanks for listening.